This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Everything, everyone's handling it differently. I'll admit, it's been a tough weekend for me. I've had a hard time sleeping. It's just a hard time kind of wrapping my head around everything. And it feels weird a little bit to sit down and do a sports show. It feels weird to
sports.
Be, well, whatever it is that we do, it feels, today was a weird day as I was coming in and thinking about what happens to the show? How do we go about it? How much do people want to hear about it? It was strange. I'll admit this is.
Well, I could hear it in your ahoy.
Yeah, this has been one of the strangest and I'll say toughest days to me that I've had coming on and doing the show now for 17 years, give or take what I've been doing this, having conversations with my kids. About it has been weird. Something that we've talked about quite a bit, and it's just like I said, it's how anyone can say that it's not strange or it's not difficult or it's not challenging for anyone in this country right now. To me, is I don't know. I think you're just being dishonest or disingenuous with yourself, or you just don't care, and that's terrifying to me.
All right. Well, I can tell you that we have a fairly normal show today.
Yeah.
There is some stuff to discuss about when sports may fire back up for us, which we need more than ever, right?
Well, we've always tried to do, our part to talk about what obviously people are talking about, but at the same time, give a distraction because we're not a political show. We do talk about social issues, but for the most part, we've tried to pride ourselves over the years on being a bit of a distraction, but
speak for yourself.
there are times when it goes beyond that. And I think it's then again, disingenuous to not acknowledge what's going on and try to pretend that this is a normal day.
Well, COVID's still going on. We've got the latest on that.
Yeah. Someone said, who would have thought COVID could blow a 28-3 lead in the fourth quarter?
Great
because,
tweet.
Because boy, that is, that's on the back burner right now.
Yeah. All right. So here's the thing. We have black guy.
Yeah.
Hey-oh. Rashad Taylor.
Is in a stunning development. The three whitest guys in Portland. Maybe we're not the best to offer a varied point of view on race relations in our country.
So I think you guys do okay.
Not too bad.
Not too bad. Well, that's I'll take that as a compliment.
That's like asking me to talk about childbirth and my experiences through it. Why? Because I watched someone give birth?
You've seen it. That's enough, right?
Not quite the same thing.
I saw it on video in like eighth grade.
Yeah.
You know, the sex ed class.
Yeah, so you're an expert.
I think my video was much... I don't know, it's probably the same video. They haven't updated that thing in
I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, I think there's only one.
No, there's only one.
One ever.
They don't bother doing a new one.
It's made in like 77, and it's just like, it's on an old film strip, 8mm.
All right, so here's what we're thinking. So Rashad Taylor of 1080 The Fan fame does a show with Mike every Sunday. What I'm thinking, Rashad, well, first of all, for the listeners, our show will be back to normal. There's no normal now.
This is the new normal, man.
This is just so weird. It's like with COVID and now this. In other words, what I'm saying is, like you said, the distractions are coming. We'll play fart drops and all that good stuff. But we can't just come on and ignore what's happening in the country and around the world. And so we thought to bring Rashad on because, Rashad, my approach is I think we're at the stage of all of this where being a white guy who's well aware of my white privilege, nobody cares what I have to say. Right. If I had hot takes about any of this, I should keep them to myself. Right. Because it's not doing any good.
Well, see, here's the thing. I kind of think the opposite. Like, your white privilege kind of, we would like you to speak up, you know, because I think really in situations like this, it's going to take those white allies to really get things moving and really start that conversation. And race is such a difficult thing to talk about with people because it forces people to really look at their own prejudices that they may have themselves, whether they mean to have them or not. Maybe it's the way you grew up. Maybe it's just, you know, whatever. But it's just always been one of those things like, you know, nobody wants to talk about it. So everybody sweeps it under the rug and continues to move forward. But until those people really decide to come forward and say, this is a problem, how can I, as a white man, a white woman who doesn't, I can't empathize with you like that. Like, I want to know what we can do to change things. That's the only way that's going to happen.
Now, that I agree with. What I was more coming from was like the idea of the rhetoric. It seems repetitive and tiresome.
Of course.
Coming from, right. And that's why, so I'm not saying that I can't do good in our chairs. Mm-hmm. We're very aware of that if we can harness that well enough. But I think having a guy like you in is
a different voice.
Way more effective from our perspective than just us sitting here.
And especially
with
at a time
opinions.
Like right now, like, you know, this past week, and I don't know if you guys felt it, but I absolutely did. It was the weirdest week. Like, there was the incident in Central Park with the bird watcher and the lady walking her dog. Mm-hmm. There was the incident at an office building when three black men were in their, like, a shared kind of office space, and they were working out, and they were called, somebody called the police on them for looking suspicious or whatever the case is. And then, of course, George Floyd was kind of the firing cap. You know, that was kind of the thing that made everything, you know, blow up. And really what you've seen over the past couple of days is a multitude of these different situations that have kind of, from Michael Brown to Philando to everybody that's been, Sandra Bland, to all those things that have happened. And now all of a sudden,
it's sad
people,
that every one of those is a name that you know, and you can go down a laundry list and you're just scratching the surface.
It's become a part of, you know, really who we are as America. And like, so those names are ingrained in our memories, you know, kind of like the way an athlete or something is. Like, you know that name, you know, the phrase "I can't breathe" has been something like, even if you, like today I was doing an interview with a local, you know, a rap artist, and he was struggling to figure out his name. He said, "I can't breathe," Eric Garner. Like, it was one of them things that phrase is closely associated to him. And I think what you've seen is just people that are fed up, people that are scared, people that are incredibly angry about everything that's happened. And it's just, there's been no repercussions for it, you know. And luckily we've seen these officers at least be, you know, charged with third degree murder. Okay, that's good. They're charged with something, but we've seen so many instances where that hasn't been the case. And these officers who, and let me say this, and I said this yesterday on Sports Sunday, if something goes bad, please believe that black people or whomever else, we're calling the police. Like, we're not, you know, we're not waiting for things. Like, we want to be safe too. So we're calling the police. So there, in no way do we think every police officer is bad or every police officer is out to hurt or kill or maim black people. Much the same, but every black person isn't out to hurt and rob and murder and rape and pillage the way that people think that they might be ready to do. So we understand this. We know this. And really at this point, man, we're looking for answers that don't seem to come. You know, I'll be real. 37 years old, celebrating my birthday a little earlier last month. I have a 9-year-old son, or he'll be 9 soon. I had to have a really difficult conversation with him this past Thursday as the riots started and everything. And he was asking questions like, why is this happening? Why are they doing this? And when I should be talking to him about the birds and the bees, or when I should be talking to him about his favorite superheroes or his favorite subjects and during quarantine school, instead, I have to tell him that unfortunately, things are different because we look this way. And I had to really tell him how to encounter the police and how to encounter people that have a certain level of, I guess, power over them. But the sad part is, no matter what I tell my son, no matter how poignant I am, no matter how much I tell him to comply and do everything the right way, yes, sir, no, sir, what can I do, hands up, whatever the case is, there is a chance that none of that will matter.
It breaks my heart because I never had to have that conversation with my son. And the only, you know, only experience I've had with any of this is kind of through third parties, but I've told the story before, and it really changed my perspective. Is I had a teammate of mine who was African-American, was a good guy, and we used to hang out all the time, and we got pulled over once at 12:30 at night, and I was driving and pulled over to the side of the road and didn't think anything of it and started rummaging through my glove box because I knew I was speeding and was going to have to produce my my license and registration. And the look on his face telling me to get my damn hands on the wheel, the guy was terrified.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there thinking to myself, dude, this was a legit a guy that I was scared of. Like, he just was a guy that you didn't mess with.
Yeah.
And to see the absolute terror on a grown man's face that I was reaching into a glove box.
Yeah.
To get registration. And it never dawned on me that experience, just the idea of getting pulled over in his life, was so much different than mine. And that experience you have about talking to your kid, that just absolutely breaks my heart. And I just feel like a lot of people, if you grow up in a white community, not only does that never cross your mind, but you don't know anyone that has that. Right. And so when you hear these stories, it doesn't relate to people. And I think it's hard for them to let that sink in. I think a lot of people's minds are like, what are you talking about? Things are great. Because in their world, it is.
Yeah.
And they don't look outside of their own.
And it should be noted that, man, America's awesome. Like, being an American and being in America, like, the privilege that we have as Americans, the opportunity, like, it's awesome. But sometimes being black in America, it's just not as awesome. And at least, you know, again, as we have those allies that, again, understand that things aren't great for those black and brown people. Like, we need to figure out what's going on. I think we can start getting somewhere. But I'll be real. I'm from Portland. I spent most of my life here from outside of some college and living in Las Vegas and stuff like that. This is my city. To watch it burn the way it has over the last couple of days sucks. I hate to see it. Yesterday I was really emotional when I came in and did the show with Lynch. I was kind of able to calm down a little more, but then it happens again last night. Like, this is not the way to destroy, you know, our city and destroy certain things. Like, I understand, like, I'm hurting, just like you don't, and you don't have to be black to hurt right now. Like, and that's one of those things. Like, you don't have to be a certain race to understand what's going on is wrong and understand that everybody deserves the same human rights as anyone else. And so, like, right now, like, I woke up and the sun was out, you know, after such a gray weekend where the weather just fit the weekend so well to me. It was just dark and gloomy, like a scary movie. Like, any scary story starts off dark and stormy. That's what it felt like these past couple days. And I look outside today and it was a nice day. And I just woke up with so much joy knowing that, number one, the people that I know, whether white, black, they've reached out and said, man, I love you. And I appreciate you, man. Looking at Souk right now, a guy who most of you guys know is this, man, Souk is this tough guy. To see him with this emotion on his face right now, man, it's touching to me. It touches my heart. To see Isaac Ropp, who, again, is the funny guy on the station, and everybody knows it, to know that.
Did you hear that?
You're funny. Yeah. You're pretty funny. I mean, this guy probably doesn't think so, but, I mean, you are. But to see this emotion come from these people, man, it speaks volumes of really their heart and really the heart that I wish everybody could kind of try to adopt over the next little bit.
All right, so this is Isaac and Souk starting off the show with Rashad Taylor. We're going to do one more segment with Rashad, then I know he's got to get going, and then we'll do some sports, tell you what's the latest on baseball coming back, NBA, all that stuff. Also, they're up at the International Space Station, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that
we'll talk about that.
Kind of, if you want something good over the weekend, yeah. I give you that. That was really cool.
So we have some distractions, but I want you to think about this question. Rashad, for when we come back, because I think my approach to this, as I told you, is I just want to ask questions. I have questions. I want to ask questions.
Yes, sir.
Because I want to help, but I also, I mean, I know we have a radio show. Other than that, I don't necessarily know how. So I think one way, I guess, I do know is to just ask questions to guys like you, disseminate it. Let's listen.
Yes, sir.
We need to listen. So the question is what is the main thing that white people need to know about being a black American? Okay. If you can put that into words for some of our listeners when we return, that would be fantastic. We'll start
no
there.
Problem.
Gotcha. Rashad Taylor is with us. We'll do one more segment with Rashad coming up next. Stay with us. It is 316 on The Fan. All right, we'll get to the Fan Personality Series poll question number 8 today, next segment. But we've got Rashad Taylor in here talking about the weekend events, really the last 4 or 5 days. And so my question is, Rashad, help us. What is the main thing white people in the U.S. don't understand about being a Black American? Let's start with that.
Man, that's a loaded question because there's a lot there. Being Black in America, number one, I asked if I told people what it was, if they would actually believe me. You know, like, would you actually 100% be like, wow, that's an interesting perspective. But the truth is, like, it almost sounds fake at times. Like, being Black in America means that you can't be too ethnic. I can be just ethnic enough. Like, for instance, my name is Rashad Taylor. When I send a resume, and I've done this before, and I won't name the company just for, you know, I've sent a resume, same one. My resume's pretty impressive, right? So I sent one and sent another with a different name. Rashad Taylor, it's a Black dude's name. We all pretty much know. And I sent one was like, you know, Sean Spears, and just to see what would happen. And I never got a call back. Sean Spears, though, got that same call. Same resume, same everything. Why wouldn't that happen? Like, being discriminated against because of your name, certain things you guys read a lot. Obviously, you work, you know, in media, so reading is important. I'm sure you've read stories about natural hair not being allowed in certain job types, for certain job titles. So my natural hair that grows curly out of my head isn't professional enough to work certain places. I can, you know, people can take the style of African Americans, the look, the full lips, the everything, and make it chic. That's what it becomes when it becomes a part of white culture. Like, it's okay to have little twisties in your hair if you're a white woman, but when you're a Black woman does it, that's unprofessional. That's not cool. You know, it looked, you know, that when Africans had braids and everything, it was considered ghetto. It was considered, you know, unattractive. Bo Derek did it, and oh my God.
Guys cut their hair going into the draft combine because they want to be perceived as professional.
Yes. You know, Cam Newton was told, and this is an old story, but when he first got drafted by the Panthers, no tattoos, no anything. Like, we want to make sure and Cam's like, I'm not getting tattoos or anything, so that's not a problem for me. But the fact that you would add that, you tell me that I would have to dress myself up like that, is just kind of a part of what it is. Like, we can wear the same thing, and I think you and I kind of had a small Twitter, like a back and forth, but it wasn't even a back and forth. One night I went out, I'm on Alberta Street, I'm wearing a flannel and a beanie, and so it's regular kind of hipster, you know, Portland lumberjack gear, I guess, you know, go ahead and say that. And we're leaving this place, and this girl just knocks into me, and I'm just kind of like, you know, excuse me, just saying that. And she gets all mad, probably all drunk, calls me a thug and stuff like that. I'm like, what the hell, man? But one of the guys she was with is in the exact same outfit. And I'm seriously, same red lumberjack. I was like, I'm a thug, and he's a what? You
he's
know?
A hipster.
So yeah, and it was kind of like, what is that? You know, so it's just kind of navigating through certain things like that can be incredibly difficult. And just as I'm saying this now, there's probably somebody on the text line that's seething and like, man, there's no way that happens. It's a normal thing. Have you guys ever been in a room? I'm sure you've probably much closer, but in a room of just Black people ever?
I've had growing up here, and then I grew up in Alaska. I grew up in the Northwest, and then I went to school in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
I was amongst the whitest people on earth, but sports exposed me to other cultures.
Yes.
And I've told the story, but I remember we were playing in my first bowl game, my redshirt freshman year. We were in Memphis, Tennessee, and we went to a mall, and it was a Black mall. And it was me and three of my teammates, and we walked around, and I swear we were the only four white people in
that
entire mall. And I thought to myself, oh my God, this is what it's like. And I went and apologized. We had a Black guy on my team, Brian McDonald, who's a good buddy of mine, who's a running back. And I went and said, hey, man, I'm sorry. I had no idea. I had no idea what it was like for him walking around campus. And we would hear him talk about it, and I would kind of roll my eyes and be like, whatever.
Yeah.
When all eyes are staring at you and they're like, what the hell are you doing here? It is such an uncomfortable feeling. And so many times we just don't get the shoe on the other foot. And when you don't have it, people won't accept that this is a reality. And you're right. There are a ton of people listening to this right now that will hear something like that, and they'll say you're wrong. They'll be like, no, like, that's just your perception of it.
And that's the thing. It is. And so you've been in that. I went to Grant High School, not a very diverse high school, but at the time it was about 17% Black or so. I went to Western Oregon, which was not diverse at all, you know, at that point. So being the lone Black guy in a sea full of white faces, you get used to it. at a point, but you learn how to navigate through certain things. And so my question is, like, living in Portland, like, has anybody ever been in a situation where you're the lone white person in a sea, in a room full of black people? I'm sure it'd be a little bit uncomfortable for you at a point. This is just the reality we live in. Everywhere we go in Portland is incredibly white. We are a very small part of the community here. So just feeling okay and comfortable going somewhere, it can be and a huge issue. So, man, just it's like I said, it's such a loaded question, and I could really talk for a long time. Being black in America means that I have to be mindful of how angry I can get, and how if I can't be I can't dress a certain way, you know, I can't really have my music a certain level in my car. Like, everything that you probably wouldn't think twice about, I have to think two and three times about. Just having a nice car sometimes can be a bit of a target for you. And that's just something, as you work hard to buy a Mercedes, a Range Rover, or whatever the case is, and then you have to worry about, man, I have license, insurance, registration, just making sure, just in case I get pulled over. Like,
Why are you driving that car?
And not for every police officer. Again, for the police officers that are out there that are doing their thing, especially right now during this time of COVID, which we all kind of seem to have conveniently forgot about over the past, you know, couple of days, man, I applaud you. You guys are doing, man, amazing work, the ones that are actually doing the amazing work. But let's just be real. There's some of you guys there that are not awesome, and we continue to see it. We saw the execution of a black man, another execution of a black man on live TV. I think when we say all lives matter, I understand some people don't mean it as a slight, but it kind of is, because if all lives matter, then we wouldn't have to say Black Lives Matter. We wouldn't have to tell you that these people are being murdered on TV and nobody's really doing anything. There's been no convictions there. You know, there have been few convictions, I should say. So, yeah, there are people that are at this point, they are tired of explaining their blackness. They're tired of explaining the fact that we are not angry at you. They're tired of explaining that, man, we just want to take care of our kids and our families and all that stuff as well. And it seems like no matter, we have to be saints or we're devils. And if you're a saint, you're one mistake away from being a devil. And then once that happens, there's no coming back from it. And I'm just letting you know that that's not the case, man. We are here to live lives like everyone else. Yeah. And, you know, it sucks that even now in 2020 that I'd have to come on the number one show in Portland and even stay for a second that, man, black lives do indeed matter.
Yeah.
You know, so.
What are practical ways, Rashad? This is Rashad Taylor with us for just a few more minutes. What are practical ways more white people can be better allies?
I just think continue to have the conversation. Be comfortable being uncomfortable. Be comfortable being uncomfortable. Know that these conversations about race, find out something about yourself that you might not be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, like, don't run away from that, man. Understand, accept that, and say, how can I be better? How can I help? Even for us, you guys, white people aren't the only people that can be racist. We can be racist too. Like, it's one of those things. So we can even have some our own prejudices and things that we kind of have. That's what history has taught us. For you guys to feel a certain way towards us, for us to feel a certain way towards you. That's just the way things were set up. Separate schools, separate fountains, separate pools.
And not that long
ago. Yeah, and mind you, this was 40 years ago, 50 years ago. This, we're not talking 200 years ago. So everything has been designed to keep us away from each other and to keep us at odds until we decide to really, man, have those really uncomfortable conversations, for people to really spend time with students from underserved communities and stuff like that, and let them know that, man, we're here. My question is, where are my athletes? I'm looking right at you, Blazers. Where are you? And if this is the community you live in right now, this community you serve, the ones that tries their hardest to pay you a lot of money to be, where are you? Like, I love the comments, I love the tweets and the everything, but there are people that need you right now on the front lines to stand in and say, this isn't cool. Stand in and say, man, stop burning the city. Like, we need those people right now.
I talked about this with Orlando Williams a lot. I love,
Orlando Williams.
He is so smart and thoughtful on this very topic. And he says exactly what you say. It's like, just be comfortable being uncomfortable because it's uncomfortable to talk about.
Absolutely.
But one of the things that he and I talked about a lot was when we were doing, and I did like talking ball and stuff with him. So we'd talk off the air and stuff. And he was just a great guy to talk to. And he said, my big thing was, and he agreed that, how do you have a conversation about this when so many people come from varying starting points? Like there are some people who totally minimize this as an issue, don't even see it as an issue. There are other people who totally get it and are with you and are like, what can we do? And all of this myriad of people, these people in between, how do you have this conversation that is so layered and so complex when you've got people coming at it from so many different, whether it be truly ignorant to truly enlightened viewpoints? How do you even begin that conversation?
That's the million-dollar question is, how do we get to that point to where everybody can at least just be at the table and be, I guess, mature enough to be at that table and hear the other side out? And I think that's when you're an extremist on any side, man, I'm not looking to work with black people. I'm not looking to work with white people. Like, I mean, that's how a lot of people kind of feels like, man, we can do this without you. And I don't think that's fair. I think it's false because we're trying to get to a place where everybody has equal human rights. And I think it's going to take everybody equally talking about that. However, man, how you get that going, I think it's a matter of all those people that really make laws and really move culture. They have to be involved. And I think when people, Don Lemon the other night called out a myriad of celebrities and not just the athletes, man, Oprah, where are you? You know, like these are the people that if you're going to really, you know, have something to change, it's going to take some people with some big money and can make some big decisions to be at that table to say, yeah, this isn't right. We're not doing this anymore. And the truth is none of those people are at the table. And until they step forward and say, yes, I want to be a part of that change. Jay-Z is working with like prison reform and some other stuff. He's doing some work. So he's doing, you know, certain things. But again, just like anything else, man, it takes those faces that we know, that we recognize, that we respect, those voices to step forward and say, yeah, I'll be a part of whatever. Who else is willing to come from your side, from the left wing and say this? Who's willing to come from this and say, let's have this conversation? And until that happens, like, honestly, we're just going to keep talking and circling. It starts with the man in the White House, man. And not to be too political, because I know that's not what we do here, but it starts with leadership. And if your leadership is effed up, then everything else is going to follow suit. And right now you have a leadership that is not paying any attention to the disenfranchised. And this right here that you're seeing and everything is a result of not being paid attention to for the past 400 years or so.
How much do you worry that this will pass just like
wash, rinse, and repeat?
Yeah, like, are you seeing?
I work with students, and one of them was kind of telling me, and it made me really sad. She was kind of like, oh, it's another one? Who died this time? Like, what was this? And she was like, it just happened so much. I can't even keep track. And I'm like, our kids have gotten so desensitized to everything that's happened to where it's just like, oh, well, another shooting, another killing. So, I mean, that depends. Like, what's going to distract us next? You know, what new series is going to come out and what new music or whatever is going to come out to where we're all paying so much attention to this? It was The Last Dance most recently. That kind of took our mind off of COVID and everything that was going on. Just talk about Jordan for 5 weeks, right? Now, what's that going to be? So I'm hoping that this isn't just swept under the rug like Freddie Gray, like Michael Brown, like everything else that's kind of happened, because please believe when the next one happens, it's going to be big. Yeah. And so until you start getting things going right now, like you're seeing riots all across the country, not just here in Portland,
the world
across the world is rioting. They're rioting in Canada. Well, Canada riots over hockey, first round hockey wins. So like we know that that's what they do, but I'm saying this is not just an isolated issue. This is something that's happening all across our country. And until our leadership starts making some decisions, starts having some really difficult conversations, unfortunately, like, we're going to see more of our city and more of our country burn. And that's the opposite of, I think, what any of us want to see right now.
All you can hope for is that from this comes real change.
Absolutely.
Right? Because their, you know, lives have been lost. Livelihoods have been destroyed. Ugliness across the board. And if it's all for nothing, and 5 years from now, 2 years from now, a year from now, we're right back to the same point, then it's all for naught, as opposed to maybe this can finally be the catalyst for real change and we can build a better country.
Absolutely.
You know, patriotism and being an American is not blindly saluting a flag and saying we're the greatest country on earth. That just doesn't do anything. We deserve better. We can be better. We will be better. And we decide what kind of country we have. And one of my favorite quotes of all time was by Bill Clinton, who said, "There's nothing wrong with America that can't be fixed by what's right with America. But we get to decide, not as white people, not as black people. We get to decide as Americans, what kind of country we want to have moving forward. And I hope to God, or whatever it is that you pray in or you don't pray, whatever just sensibilities you have, that from this comes a better America. And we can look back on something that was horrific and say at least something positive, and we learned our lessons from it."
Absolutely.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, guys. Man, listen, these are two of the best people that you'll find. I know I get asked about questions I get to all the time, man. I love you guys. I love what you do. I appreciate you for having the wherewithal to have me in and be able to speak on this. Thank
you,
guys.
Love you, too. Thanks for coming in. Indeed. It was important to hear from you. And keep up the great work on Sports Sunday. You're better than Mike Lynch. Like, you carry him.
I don't know if there's any better than Mike Lynch, man. That guy's pretty good. He's like Junior Swag.
You do carry me, Rashad. Don't
you just carry him?
Okay. Well, maybe I do.
From hauling his big ass around.
Hey, respect and listen. Those are my two. Like, if I'm gonna have an opinion about this, I would just use this microphone to say, just have respect.
I love it.
And just listen. I wanted to listen to what you had to say today. That's what I wanted to do.
Take someone that doesn't look like you and go give them a hug. Take someone that has a different opinion than you and listen. Don't try to talk. Listen to it.
Yeah. Listen, hear them out. Have a conversation. Exactly. That's all good. And it's okay not to agree.
That's where
understand
we're at.
It's okay for us not to agree for now. Let's make sure we get to a point to where we're at least on the common ground. That's all we can do.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.